Thank you very much. My name is Eddie, and I'm an alcoholic. I never was a speaker, you know, talk in front of people, but they told me if I like the way I live now and I wanted to stay sober, that I'd do whatever was asked, and so that's what I do. You know, I come from a long line of drunks. My dad, my uncles, my grandpa, they were all drunks. I remember growing up, we moved out here from Missouri, and we lived in the Woodville labor camp, and little bitty metal sheds. And on Sundays, you know, they worked in the fields, and on Sundays, everybody just got there in the middle of the park and got drunk. That's what they did. And they would bring their sons up there, and they would fight them. You know, that's the way it worked. And I remember growing up, the last time that I had to fight somebody, I was about 8 years old, and this guy had a mustache. And I mean, I knew he was going to beat my ass, you know. But I had no choice, so I took my ass bit whooping, you know. And we moved a lot. We moved from here to Palo Alto, or from here to Missouri, or from here to Arkansas. We moved all the time. That's what we did. And so I never did, you know, I became a loner is what I did. Never did really hook up with a group. So for me, when I turned about 12, 13 years old, I was introduced to alcohol, and I had found, you know, the spiritual way as far as I was concerned. I didn't have to be a scared little boy anymore. I just really didn't give a shit. And that's the way it went. You know, I did pretty good in school up till that time. And then after that, I really didn't care. They had opened, I went to start a high school there in Porterville, Menachie High School. They had opened it. And I remember we'd ride the bus from Woodville to Menachie. And then we'd get off the bus, and me and a couple of guys would start walking. And we spent the day walking home. And so I didn't do a lot of high school. The day I turned 17 years old, I was a junior. It was October. And I got on a bus there in Porterville, Orange Belt, and I went to Fort Ord, joined the Army, just to get the hell away. Anyway, I always said that I like to finish stuff that I started, you know. So I was in the Army about a year, and I got busted, and they had me doing the piss test once a week, and that went on for, I don't know, about 6 months. I had to do that for a year, and one day I'd been there long enough that I was going to have my leave, so I was going to get to come home for 30 days. So I bought my ticket, and I got ready, and we were in the motor pool, and I was talking to everybody about leaving that night. And the captain came up to me and told me that my leave had been canceled, and I couldn't go anywhere. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he said, well, you got to take that piss test once a week, so you can't go anywhere for another 6 months. So I went ahead and got on the plane that night, left, and came home. And about 30 days later, I got a job at the cotton gin. And about 30 days later, I come pulling into the house, and this FBI guy was standing there and told me what he was there for, to pick me up. And I told him the story, and he said, well, if you'll turn yourself in on Monday morning, you know, you won't have an FBI record. So I did. I went over to Fort Ord and turned myself in, and they told me, you know, I told them the story. Anyway, they said, you know, we're going to give you an opportunity. We will let you go to Texas. You don't have to go back to Hawaii. It's the same place. We'll let you go to Texas and finish out your time. And I said, no, I'll just spend the time in jail. So that's what I did. And, you know, I was 18 years old, and that was about the long, I was there about 2 months in the brig, and that was about the longest time I'd been straight since I was about 13 years old. Anyway, I got out, and you know, nothing changed. I just kept drinking, using, and I got married. Well, you know what I did is when I first come home, is my sister introduced me to her friend, and we went out for a while. But the only thing that really mattered, you know, was the drinking and me. So after a while, I'd split up with her. Anyway, I ended up getting married to another girl and had a couple of little girls. And we lived there in Woodville. But I didn't come home. You know, I was a drunk. I worked every day, but, you know, shit, I wouldn't have enough money to pay the rent. I'd spend it on Friday. My check was gone. Anyway, that lasted about 4 years, and she finally left, and I got hooked back up with a girl that my sister had introduced me to, and we had a son, and then we had a daughter, and but I would just come and go, you know, I wasn't there for them. Anyway, one day I had a pretty good job up there in Porterville at this aircraft factory, and I was a mechanic. And I'd go all over the world fixing these helicopters, you know, for people. And so I didn't make real good money back then, but it was a steady job. And one day in 84, this place closed, and so I had went all over the world, so I could pretty much went to work anywhere I wanted. So I ended up going back to Minnesota, and I ran a shop for a guy back there for 3 years. And like I said, you know, nothing changed. I was still drunk, stoned every day. A couple of times back there, man, I wanted to get cleaned up so bad. I went to this place. They told me about this place in the town not too far away, and I went over there, and it was a 30-day program. Well, I didn't know anything about AA or anything else. I knew how to get drunk, what I knew. Anyway, I went to this place and went in there, and there were people there, you know, in this 30-day program, and I'm talking to this guy, and I tell him, you know, my story, and he said, well, you can get some help, you know, and he said, you can quit if you want to, you know, and I said, man, I want to quit, you know, I'll do whatever it takes, you know, to quit. He said, okay. He said, well, we'll sign you up here, and you come in here and you stay 30 days, you know, and I said, shit, I can't stay 30 days, I got to work, you know, and he goes, well, you know, if until you put it first, nothing's going to change. So what I did was I quit drinking. And I started drinking that near beer, see, at the bar. So I'd sit there at the bar and everybody else is drinking, and I'm drinking near beer, you know. And that lasted about 3 days. And so I was drunk again. Anyway, she wasn't my wife at that time, my girl. She'd come back home, and because, hell, like I said, I was just a drunk. And so anyway, I called her and I said, look, I said, I want you and the kids back. I said, I quit drinking, and I'm going to come home, and we're going to get married, and, you know, I'm going to bring you back, and we're going to have a good life. And so she agreed. So I came home, and we got married, and here just a while back, we were talking about it, you know. She looked at a picture, and we got married in her mom and dad's front room, and here I am with a beer. You know, nothing had changed. Anyway, I took them back there. It was hell living with me. I wasn't there. So she was back there in Minnesota, away from her family, had the kids, and was by herself pretty much the way it worked. Anyway, one day it just came to a head, and we were going to move back to California. So we did. We moved back to California, and I took her to her mom and dad's house, her and my kids. And I left, went to Washington State, and started a job up there, and nothing changed. I was still drunk. Anyway, I was up there for about a year, and it's about 88. And I came back home, and tried to get back with her, and she wasn't having no part of it this time. You know, I was just a drunk. She knew it. So I told her, I said, well, you know, I'm going to get cleaned up. So I started this business. When I got this business started, I went down and got health insurance. So I went down to this place in Exeter, and it was at the hospital there, and it was called Parkside, and it was a 30-day program. So I said, okay, yeah, I'm in. You know, I want to get my life cleaned up. I've been drunk my whole life. Anyway, I went in there, and, you know, they had the 12 steps on the wall. They had the traditions on the wall, and we had group, and we talked about everything. But I didn't hear none of it, and I didn't see any of it. You know, the only thing that I thought and I kept in my mind was, if I don't drink, then everything's going to be okay, you know. Just don't drink, no matter what, or do anything else. So we had a little bit of family where my wife would come in, and family group. And so I was talking good shit. You know, I'd been there 30 days, and then we had this family group. And they asked my wife, and everybody's talking, and then I'm talking, and then it starts with the wives, and they asked my wife, said, well, you know, what do you think about all this, you know? She said, he'll tell you anything you want to hear, you know. I know this guy, and he'll tell you anything you want to hear. And, you know, she's right. I mean, she knows me better than I know myself. Anyway, I ended up getting this thing done for 30 days, and like I say, for me, it was all about, it wasn't about God, and it wasn't about steps, and it wasn't about you people, and it wasn't about sponsors. It was just don't drink. Just don't drink and don't use, no matter what. So anyway, I got out, and I went to probably maybe 10 meetings. They told me, you got to go to meetings. Yep. So I went to maybe 8 or 10 meetings. And then, like I said, I'd started this business. So I just started working. And I worked all the time. You know, I worked like I drank. I worked 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. When my kids were born and growing up, I was a drunk and I wasn't around my kids. And when I got cleaned up, I worked all the time and I wasn't around my kids. And I did that for 10 years. And I tell guys that I sponsor now that that's no way to live. You know, it was miserable. You couldn't drink, you know, and you have no life. So you just work all the time, and that's all there is. And it was miserable. Anyway, one day, this buddy of mine called me from overseas, and he's got a company over there, and he's got a bunch of employees. And he said, Eddie, he said, I want you to come over, and we're going to have a party for you, you know. And I said, well, John, I said, you know, I don't drink or nothing. He said, well, I know, but he said, shit, we're over here in Guam, and nobody will know. You know, you're way, a long way from home. So, like I said, I didn't have you guys, and I didn't have God, and I didn't have nothing. All I had was Eddie, and Eddie's very dangerous. So I thought about it for about 2 weeks, and I told my wife, hey, I'm going to go, because I used to go overseas a lot and work. I said, I'm going to go over here and work, make us some money, you know. And I'd already made up my mind. And so I did. I went over there, and I was drunk for, I don't know, 10 days. I was there about 2 weeks. Anyway, the day after I got there, I got drunk, and I was drunk the whole time. So the day come that about 2 weeks later that I was going to be coming home. And I was going to leave the next day. So I thought, well, I won't drink today because I'm leaving tomorrow. And when I got up that morning, well, shit, by noon I was drunk because I didn't have to leave till tomorrow. So I drank that night, and I woke up the next morning hungover, and I had to be at the airport. I think my flight left at like noon. And so I got there about 10 o'clock, and I thought, well, shit, you know, I got to land in Hawaii and spend the night there before I come home, so it's okay. And so I got drunk that day, too, and drank all the way over there and drank that night. And then I woke up the next morning and I was going to be coming home. So I thought, okay, now I can't drink because I'm going to come home today. So I got to the airport and I didn't start drinking until I got on the plane. And by the time I got to LAX, about 4 hours later, I thought, okay, I got about 2.5 hour drive home. So I can't drink this 2.5 hours. So I bought a 12-pack to make it home. I hid it, I think, for about a week, maybe 10 days, something. Anyway, one day the wife smelt this alcohol on me, you know. And like I said, I've been sober for a long time. And she said, you've been drinking. And I said, well, yeah. I said, you know, I'm 45 years old, and if I want to have a beer every once in a while, I can, you know. And that lasted about a week, maybe two. And then I wasn't coming home no more. And I was drunk all the time. Anyway, things progressed, to say the least, fast. Skip forward, I thought it had been like 2 years. And my wife came to me and she said, hey, I got this kit I want you to test, you know. And I said, well, what the hell are you talking about, you know? She said, well, I want you to take this test. And I go, no, I ain't taking no test. So it went by for, I don't know how long, a week, two, a month. And then she came with this test kit, and she said, you're going to test, you know. Well, I was so screwed up that I said, well, sure, I'll test, ain't no problem, you know. So she came back with the results, and she said they tested it twice, and they said you should be dead. And so I just told her, I said, well, you know, they got mixed up with somebody else is what they did. Mine's mixed up. And she said, well, it may have, but your ass is gone, so it don't really matter, you know. So I thought about it for a little bit, and, you know, I was dying, period. I'd get up in the morning, my shop, I've got my shop about 100 yards from my house. I would get up in the morning at 5 o'clock, and I'd go to that shop, and I would go out in the back, and I wouldn't come home until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd do it again. And I got down to about 160 pounds, and I was dying. And so I finally admitted, you know, I got a problem. She said, I know you got a problem. And I said, well, you know, I did it once before. I got cleaned up, and I can do it again, you know. So I started going to meetings there in Porterville at the Elks Club on Friday mornings. And my problem was I'd use on the way in, and I'd use on the way out. And I just couldn't get clean, you know. And so, I mean, she knows me, and I just told her, I said, I just can't get clean. I can't do it. So she got a hold of this place, and they called me, or I called them, and I was going to go down there. And I was talking to this lady on the phone, and it was another 30-day deal, you know. And this lady asked me, she was asking all these questions, and she asked me, said, are you suicidal, was one of the questions. And I said, well, hell no, I've never been suicidal. She said, oh, okay. She said, well, you can come in the morning. It's about a four-hour drive from my house. She said, you come in the morning. You'd be here by noon. I go, yeah, I'll be there by noon. So I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I got there the next night at 12 o'clock at night, you know, about. And it took me like 18 hours for a four-hour drive. I went in there, and it took me about 2 days just to start to think, you know, to get a little bit of the fog off. And we were having, it was all men, it was like 8 of us. And the guy asked me, the counselor asked me, he said, you know, tell us what's going on. Anyway, I told him my story, and he said, you know, you were cleaned up for 10 years. And I go, yeah. And he said, well, what makes you think this is going to be any different this time, you know? He said, you got clean once for 10 years, you know, what's going to change? And I said, well, you know, this time I'm willing to do anything. I don't care. I've been drunk since I was 13 years old. I was straight for 10 years, and that was just as miserable as being drunk. And I don't want to live that way no more, period. I'll do anything. You know, you tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it. And he said, well, he said, you know, the first thing that you got to do is, he said, you got to get you a higher power because your way don't work. You know, you've tried, you know, you admit that you said that it was all about just don't drink. Eddie can fix it, you know. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. So that night I went in there and I got down on my knees and I prayed to God. And I've always believed that there was a God, you know, a higher power. But, you know, he didn't want nothing to do with me. I was a piece of shit. And so I got down on my knees and I prayed. And I asked God to watch over me and take care of me and just to give me a chance. And I would do anything, you know, whatever I got to do, I'll do. I just want one chance is all I want. And so the next day, I went in there and I noticed on the wall these steps and these traditions. And I thought, should I have seen that before someplace? And then I remembered the first time I got cleaned up, you know, that's where they had it on the wall. But I didn't pay attention, you know. So I started paying attention. And anyway, we had group, family group, you know, and it was different this time. You know, if you're willing, that's the way I look at it. If you're willing, things change, you know. And but you got to be willing to do anything. I thought to myself, if I put half as much effort into wanting to be straight as I did out there, the things that that I would go to any length to get drunk, you know, then I've got a chance. So anyway, we had this family group, and I was going to be leaving. And they said, Eddie said, we got these things that if you're willing to do this, then you know, you might have a chance. I said, yeah, I'll do anything. And they said, okay. They said, well, we want you to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I said, yep, I'll do that, you know. And they said, we want you to get a sponsor. I said, yep, I'll do that. And they said, we want you to get a higher power. And I said, I have, you know, I am. And they said, okay, we want you to go to aftercare too, you know. I said, I'll do that. And then they asked my wife, you know, anything she wanted me to do. And she said, yeah, she wanted, any time that she wanted me to, I would go test. Any time, you know, no question. I said, you bet, I'll do that too. I'll do anything. So he said, okay. So I came home. And when I got home, I called a buddy of mine up there in Porterville. And he had, at that time, like 18 years clean. And I told him, I said, Terry, I need a sponsor. I need a temporary sponsor because I need a little help. Terry said, no, Eddie, you need a lot of help, you know. And I said, okay, I need a lot of help. And he said, you willing to do anything? I said, anything you say, I don't care. So Terry became my sponsor. And I started my 90 meetings in 90 days. And then one day a week, I had to come over here to Visalia for my aftercare by myself. And then one day a week, I had to come over with my wife at this aftercare and for the family thing. So anyway, I got started on that. That's been quite a while back. Anyway, I got started on that, and this little girl running this thing, Tracy was her name. And so we talked and at the group, and at the end of the meeting, and I told her, you know, that I was willing to do anything to stay straight and have a life. I wanted a life this time. It wasn't about just not drinking, you know. So she said, okay, well, at the end of this meeting, I had to pay for this aftercare, see. So at the end of the meeting, she gave me these little cards, and she said, Eddie, said, I want you to take these cards, and all the meetings that you go to, I want you to get these cards signed. And sort of pissed me off, you know. And she said, well, what's the matter? And I said, well, you know, Tracy, I said, I agreed to do all this stuff, and I'm doing it. And I said, but I'm paying for this aftercare, and I shouldn't have to take those cards, you know, and get them signed. And she said, well, shit, you told me you'd do anything. And I said, give me them cards, Tracy. And I took my cards, and I got my little card signed every day, you know. So anyway, I started going to the meetings, and they also told me that the aftercare meetings don't count as your meetings, you know. So you got to do 2 days a week, you got to do two meetings, you know. So I said, whatever, I'd do anything. So I started in my meetings, and it was completely different. I mean, no comparison. they asked me, said, Eddie, when I started at these meetings, they said, hey, we want you to do this, you know, be a secretary of this meeting. I'll do anything. So I was secretary. They, we want you to be CSR of this meeting up here, you know. I said, I'll do anything. I'll be the CSR. And they even had this little skit. I mean, I was clean, I don't know, 4 months, 3 months. And I kept hearing about the humility, you know, being humble. Anyway, they had this TRASA is what it's called. And it's where these people come from all over the state to this meeting here in Visalia. And so Cheryl asked me from the Springville meet, she said, Eddie, said, do you think that you could bring your pickup over to the club there in Porterville and get the tables and take them over and set them up for this meeting, the process meeting? I said, oh, yeah, I can do that. So I did. So when I was over there cleaning up and setting up and everything, another guy came up to me and said, hey, Eddie, said, tonight we have a skit, like a little play, and said, we want you to be in this little skit. You know, shit, man, I don't want to do that, you know. But you will. Oh, yeah, I will. I don't want to. Damn right, I'll do it, you know. So I got up there, and there's about six or seven of us, and it was some stupid thing. I don't know. Anyway, I had to put this little nose on, this little shark head, and I'm in front of about 500 people, you know, and we got done with that little skit, and Cheryl said, well, Eddie, you did a good job. How do you feel? I said, like shit, Cheryl. She goes, but you had fun. Oh, yeah, Cheryl, this was wonderful. I, you know, I want to do this more often, you know. Bottom line is, for me, that is, as long as I'm willing to do what's ever asked, no matter how stupid that I think it is, there's a reason. And I tell people, I've got some sponsors, and I tell them, you know, God kept us here for one reason, because we damn sure tried to kill ourselves. That's what I told that lady when I got down there that night. I thought about it all the way down there, and I thought, if this ain't trying to kill yourself, I don't know what is, you know. It takes you 18 hours to get to a four-hour meeting, you know. Anyway, I believe that God kept us here for a reason. I've seen in the years that I've been clean this time, a lot of people die, you know, that had a lot of time and went back out and died. I don't know why I'm not dead. You know, I should have been dead a long time ago, a lot of times. But a guy told me once, he said, it's because you're here to carry the message for the other people. That's why. So when people ask you to chair a meeting, or people ask you to do something, it ain't for you. It ain't about you. It's about everybody else, you know. If you're willing to help somebody else, then you're out of self. And if you're out of self, then you've got a chance. God's been good to me. I've been clean almost 9 years now, so it's almost 10 again. I wouldn't trade one day of the last 8.5 years for the 10 years that I was straight. And I don't wish that upon anybody about the not drinking. I know a guy right now that I'm talking to that's been straight for about 30 years, and he's so miserable, you know. It's just unbelievable. It's misery. It's what it is. I tell people it's not about the drinking and using. It's about the living. And if you can do what's asked of you daily, and the hard part for me was, you know, is a lot of it too is being humble. You know, you've got to be humble. This bullshit about being a man and being in charge, I know what it got me, you know. It got me misery. And everybody around me, I get reminded daily, you know, I've got 5 kids and 6 grandkids. About, 2 years ago, one of my grandsons was in this roller hockey. Have you ever seen them? This roller hockey stuff over here in Visalia, the hockey deal. So it was a tournament type thing. So we all went. The whole family went, you know. My kids are all grown. My youngest is 29. Anyway, me and my son were standing there. and you know, he's 30 years old. And we were talking, and he was telling me about which position he played in this roller hockey. I said, "Shit, you never played roller hockey." He said, "Dad, I did a lot of stuff you don't know about, you know. God, I hit home, you know." And then, when I came home, I apologized to all my kids, you know. And I told them that I would try to make it up, you know. I'd have to do two lifetimes, you know. But anyway, we were going to get, we heard about these, seen on news about what they feed these chickens, hormones and steroids. So we were going to get our own chickens, you know. So we did. We bought a bunch of little bitty chickens and we raised these chickens. And we're out there and my son was, something was said anyway, we've got like 24 chickens. And my son said, "Yeah," I said, I forget there was something about chickens. I don't know nothing about chickens. Anyway, my son said, "Oh yeah, so and so." And I go, "How the hell you know that?" "Well, I used to have 100 chickens." I go, "What? You never had no chickens?" "Oh yeah, Dad, I had 100 chickens." You know, I missed my kids' life is what I did. All my kids growing up, I missed it. I missed the time that I spent with my wife. You know, you just can't make that up, you know. But what you can do is you can give a life today, you know. That's what it's all about, is just today. Today, I kiss my kids, you know, and I tell my kids I love them, and I tell my wife, and I try to be there for other people. If, you know, if somebody asks me, and I can do it, I do it, period. Because it's not about Eddie no more, you know. And for that, that's why God has given me this life, you know. I love it. AA, I mean, this is what I do, you know. I had this cup, and it was a Betty Ford cup. And I've got this, it's a coffee cup. And it was sitting out there in my shop. And these rich guys were down there from Los Angeles, you know. And one of them said, "Hey," said, pointed that cup. I didn't think anything about it. And I got no qualm of telling anybody about AA. You know, it saved my life. But this rich guy said, "Hey," said, "looks like somebody got a problem." I said, "Not no more, they don't. That's why they gave him that cup, you know." They don't know what to think. But anyway, like I say, if it's all about God and staying out of self and helping somebody, getting a sponsor and going to the meetings. You quit going to these meetings, it's just a matter of time, and it's going to get you. It's going to get me, I guarantee you, because I was one of them guys that thought, you know, I quit for 10 years. I can go and have one or two. And 4 years later, I thought it was two, and I was about dead. I can't do one or two. I want mine, and I want yours, you know. And so I don't think a thing about it anymore. You know, like I can say now, it's not about the drinking. It's about the living and trying to be there for somebody else. And as long as I stay out of self, I know I got a chance, you know. And that's all I got.